It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and TalentStream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
Scott Luton here with you live on Supply Chain Now Radio. Welcome to the show. So like all of our series on Supply Chain Now Radio, you can find our replays on a wide variety of channels from iTunes and SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and of course our great partners over at Business Radio X. As always, we'd love to have you subscribe so you don't miss anything. So we're really excited about today's show. We're kicking off a brand new series. For several years now, we've been looking for ways to better spotlight a wide variety and a wide diversity of thought leadership across the end-to-end supply chain world. So we have been more successful in some ways and really less successful in others. But one of the new ways that we're adding to our collective efforts is the launch of this series today, right here on Supply Chain Now Radio. Our full access series, where we're going to be focusing our spotlight on exceptional female leaders across industries. So you can learn more at our ever-evolving landing page for this series at fullaccessonline.com, which is part, of course, of the Supply Chain Now Radio family of content. So we're very pleased to be featuring a special guest to interview today and to kick off our Full Access series. So join me in welcoming Peggy Gulick, Director of Digital Transformation, Global Manufacturing for AGCO. Good afternoon, Peggy.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
We're doing fantastic, and we are tickled to have you join us here today.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
So, Peggy, before we dive more into your professional journey, tell us a little bit more about your current role and what you do.
So that's a great question, and it actually gets a little bit complex to some people when you say digital transformation. So my title is a lot bigger, really, than probably what I'm accountable for. But fundamentally, digital transformation is really about changing how teams work together. So it's not just about technology. It's really about how we get things done together. And I always like to look at the larger companies and that have changed the way we think, like the Ubers and the 23andMe, and look at the way we work, all of us work. How we think is something that is being transformed. And so really, at the end of the day, I get to work with people, and we change how we work and how we add value to our jobs every day.
Mm. And for those that may not know, very few people, tell us more about AGCO.
So AGCO is a global company, really only 25 years old, born of acquisition. It's we have a Challenger brand, Massey Ferguson, Valtra, Fendt, and GSI Grain, and again, acquisition, there's the plant that I've actually been focused on is in Jackson, Minnesota, where they make tractors and spray equipment. So Challenger, Massey Ferguson, and Fendt product. But really a company focused on ag, not other large machinery. And I think important to note is really the vision of the company is, feeding the world. So very involved globally in agricultural projects and ways, again, to change the way we think so we can deliver food.
And extremely innovational. Some of the we had you speak at a joint Apex Atlanta CSCMP Atlanta Roundtable event, probably, I guess it was last baseball season, so roughly a year ago, and you spoke on the topic of innovation and shared a lot of different aspects of what AGCO is driving in a very meaningful and practical way. So Peggy, innovation is such, it can be such a buzzword. You have some organizations that treat it as such with lip service, and then you have others that really take it to heart and are really driving true innovation, bringing new products, services, to the market in a successful way. So how do we make innovation more successful and practical?
Yeah, and that is really the big question of the day for most companies. The way AGCO has done it is really taking our lean thinking, our problem solving, our continuous improvement, and as I always say, you know, put it on steroids. So we've offered tools now that have to do with wearable technologies, robots, cobots, you know, autonomous vehicles, drones in the plant. Those are tools that allow us to solve problems in a more innovative and technological way. So AGCO still takes on a day-to-day basis. We take a problem and we solve a problem. And fortunately for us, the market has been disruptive and quite innovative, and there's far more solutions out there to help us solve our problems, driving higher efficiency back to the place.
Fascinating. We could probably spend several hours talking about all the really neat things that you're part of and some initiatives you're leading as related to innovation and efficiencies and lean manufacturing, AGCO. But nevertheless, I want to move back in time a little bit so we can really kind of give our listeners a sense of who you are and some of your earlier beginnings. So where did you grow up and what were some of your early hobbies?
So I grew up outside Chicago, so lived quite urban and suburban Chicago, large high school, three siblings, and now I live in a 14 acres small rural area, four kids of my own now. But the hobbies I think that, you know, have stayed with me and actually probably are inherent to who I am. Avid reader, love to read, and from a activity side, I've always loved to ski, be outdoors, and find ways to balance right all of the time inside working and solving problems, right? So I think that's really where I've been. The Chicago born and raised. I'm a city girl at heart. But I live now with horses and dogs and lots of land and daughters, and it's great.
So does that make you a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan when it comes to baseball, or neither?
No, go Cubs. Yep. Okay. Good question.
All right. So let's talk about role models. I think one of the things when I talk leadership and we profile other leaders in industry, it's always interesting when they begin to talk about some of these, some of their earliest role models that provided eureka moments or those epiphanies when things, you know, certain dots got connected. So what was one or two of your earliest role models that you drew inspiration from?
You know, that's a great question, and the people I bring up are probably no one anyone's heard of, because I found my role models probably closer to home, as many of us do. But I think that since I was quite young, I have found that, you know, strong women who honor their inherent creativity have been people that I admire. And of course, as I grew up with a mom in the house who I every day thought had given up a career in singing in the opera and a career in playing games because she was spectacular at everything she did, Jeopardy to singing in church to everything that she did. But she raised kids, and I admired the strength that she had and the way she used her own inherent creativity to make our lives better every day. So I think if I have to look back, when I hear the question that you ask, role models now to me are completely different than those that inspired me to chase my dreams when I was young and really apply the skills that I had. And I'm hoping I applied those to my girls. I think all four of my girls are completely different, all chasing completely different dreams. And really at the end, it's all about finding what you're good at, what makes you happy, what's fulfilling. And that's really something that I gained from my family.
Fantastic. Wow. So let's kind of shift gears here to talking education, and we all know education never stops for many folks. But let's talk about your formal education. Where'd you go to school, and what'd you major in?
So, great leeway from the last question. So I went to the University of Iowa after high school, and I was an art and English major, and I think that was inspired by my role model, my mom, who was spectacular at both. But I found partway through my education sophomore year that I was somewhat unchallenged and seeking more. So I went back and changed my major to computer science, and really had zero knowledge of computer science, what it meant, what it offered, but it sounded, I liked the analysis side of it that came in. So finished my degree at Clark University in computer science and started my career really basically with companies that were taking advantage of analytics development, things that you do as a computer programmer, computer developer, systems analyst. Went back along the way after a major project of an SAP implementation, learned business process, and business process became to me the reason I just love process. I love the puzzle, the soup to nuts, how everything fits together. If you change one piece, what happens to everything else? And so went back for my MBA in international business, and really have stayed focused now on business process improvement globally in my last two jobs.
Mm. So if I can go back, going back to your undergraduate days, you had, it sounds like, a great healthy mix of the creative side, and I always get the left brain, right brain confused, but it seems like you had a healthy mix of the arts and, of course, computer science. It seems like the more successful technical minds, problem-solving minds are also maybe counterintuitively extremely creative. Can you speak to that a little bit, Peggy?
Wow. I mean, you are so right. So I think that you're right. If you don't have the creative side, there's always a propensity to think inside the box. And I love coming up with ideas that half of my team looks at me and says, what? There's no way. And it's more fun to me, disproving things that are great ideas or failing at them and then finding how the idea can be even better than always doing, wrote the same process, the same solution finding, the same way to solve the problem. So I agree. And I think the other thing that's really changed the way I do things is the English side, the communication side, right? So I think a lot of times when you get extremely technical, you lose a little bit of the ability to be able to present the case or really sort of PR, right, for yourself, what you're trying to accomplish. And I think you're right, the art and the creativity side that comes in with the scientific side, which usually has one right way, one wrong way, has been fun.
Mm. So to our listeners, we're speaking with Peggy Gulick, Director of Digital Transformation, Global Manufacturing for AGCO, one of the world leaders in the agricultural industry. And so, Peggy, continuing down the formal education topic, so if you were to give a first-year college student, Peggy Gulick, some advice looking back, what would that be?
Same thing that I believe I was raised to understand and I'm trying to teach my kids, find what makes you happy. And to do that, I really believe you need to engage and oftentimes dig deep. It took me a while to find the place that really was my niche in the enterprise environment. And, computer science was my launch to that, and I've never regretted what I have underneath my belt, understanding the computer science and the IT side. But, I think for me at that age, engage, network, communicate, learn things. Don't be afraid to learn things. I love surrounding myself, and I would recommend it to anybody, with people that are unlike me, not everyone being like me, because, wow, you learn so much from the diversity of having coworkers or leaders or friends that think differently than you. And it just really always makes you better. So never stop learning and continue engaging.
Mm. If we all look through the world through the same lens, it would kind of stymie a lot of things, right?
Life
might be boring. So I love kind of how you put there, especially engage. I love that that advice. That's such a I think there's so many students, you know, when we go to various colleges and we're interacting on career days or supply chain days, a lot of students can oftentimes stick to the curriculum, and then of course it's challenging. You know, that sometimes they miss plant to opportunities and networking opportunities to do what you say and engage others around them and take advantage of opportunities that kind of expands the mental boundaries. And I hope to instill the same thing in my kids. So I think that's wonderful advice.
Right. I agree.
Okay. So let's move from the collegiate and postgraduate days. Let's move into your early career days. So tell us about your first job and maybe what was one of the early critical lessons that you learned from entering the career, the industry?
You know, so again, I think that no matter what job we have, the people skills side is the majority of the job and the success of the job. So I say that in an interesting way, because we all go into jobs and we do what we're taught to do. But again, being able to communicate and understand the people around you, and I always thought someone brilliantly said at one point in time, treat others as they want to be treated, you know, not as you want to be treated, because everyone's different. But that's a critical learning factor, and I think, you know, sometimes people call that the politics in the business and the enterprise, but it's really just learning that people side. I also think that the first job critical lesson learned, it's okay to make mistakes, and I think that again, you know, I bring Engage back into that again. I think that asking to do things that maybe you weren't originally hired to do, where you see an opportunity, is a good thing. All they can do is say no, right? And so I think that critical lessons for me that I probably practiced 2 years after I started and wished I'd started in the first day were, you know, really the communication side of it, but really being open to ask to insert myself into projects that maybe I wasn't even hired to do. There's opportunity really sort of everywhere. There's opportunity everywhere, right? We all have opportunity.
Absolutely.
There's not enough capacity to do everything we have to do. So,
and what I'm hearing you say is not sit back and let the invitation or the opportunity come find you, take charge, and like you say, whether you insert yourself or you engage, you get involved, you raise your hand. That's kind of what I'm hearing, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, probably a great lesson I had. I worked for IBM. That was my second employer into my career. And across the hall, there was a big project going on, and I was working on some code for a risk processing system that I'd been hired to do. And I kept listening to them, and they were over there with the code. And as they compile it, they'd have all these errors that they had to fix. And that's really sort of a monotonous, unvalued, unappreciated job. And I said, hey, I'm new to town, don't have any family here. I said, I'm happy to take the code and compile it and look for all the compilation errors and fix those things so you guys can focus on the work that you need to do, the content, the meaning, what it's supposed to be actually doing. And by doing that, I got so immersed in fixing the small compilation problems, they said, sure, absolutely take it, that I learned the code better than anyone on the team. And in the end, I actually led the proactive support team that went to Germany to roll the tool out. So you know, you take an opportunity like that, even though it's like, oh, it's unappreciated, it seems monotonous, and wow, what I learned from that was monumental, right? It actually was a career launcher for me, so.
Wow. So the picture that you painted with the compiler and it bringing up errors, Peggy, I was in computer science for exactly one semester and found out it was above my pay grade. And I remember the C++ compilers and trying to come up with code, and I was like, well, this is not for me. So you were pretty sharp, but more importantly, I love to hear stories where folks volunteer, they engage, they lean in, and you know, you're not always rewarded when that happens, but man, just like you described, sometimes there can be huge rewards that impact careers and impact the bigger picture.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was altering. It was definitely altering. But, you know, again, you just because you're missing some commas and semicolons and you can't compile it, person looking at it has to read it and understand what's missing. So I knew the code better than anyone that was there. So it was a great opportunity that I didn't even know I was walking into. I just thought I was moving into other areas and really making new relationships and networks. But
wow. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about early promotions and you know, you've already described some things that clearly I assume would make you stand out in the crowd and eligible for certain opportunities based on, you know, that willingness to go there. But let's talk about what was one of your early promotions and I'd love to learn more about how you accomplished it and then what doors it opened.
Yeah, so from a promotion perspective, and actually, Scott, I have to say I was probably a little slow to the game to understand the value of having my own professional development plan and understanding, you know, which direction I wanted to go. So, you know, I think that's probably another lesson for people coming in, you know that when you walk in and it'll change along the way, right? But I spent a few years until I thought one day, wow, you know, a lot of value I'm driving, and yet I really need to make sure that I'm focused on which path I want to take and which direction I want to head. And I think probably my the promotion I probably remember the most was coming out of an SAP implementation at my third company and really understanding that value that I felt I was driving to business process and really being able to understand how things impacted other things all the way through the business, finance, HR, manufacturing, all the way through. And out of that, I actually was promoted into a sales and operations position. So, you know, you look at that and say, wow, where did that come from? You're a computer science major and you're compiling code at IBM. But it was a great opportunity that came in through my CEO at the company, actually. Mm. And he understood how I thought and wanted to be able to gain greater value at the organ through the enterprise on that thinking process, on taking processes and making them better. So it's probably my first introduction to Lean, although back then it wasn't called Lean, and being able to really get in, work with any department, any area, help them find gaps in how they do things, help them determine how to do them better, implement it, make sure it's sustained, and then move on. So I think that was probably my most notable because totally different direction than I ever thought I'd go in my career, and yet one of the greatest opportunities I've had to really immerse myself in the process side.
Mm. You know, Peggy, one of the things you shared earlier as you were responding is your knack for kind of understanding upstream and downstream, how one decision here can impact both ways. And not only your knack for getting that, but your interest in that. You know, so many things are said about the latest and greatest generations that are now the plurality of the workforce, and that's been one of the generalizations. But what I've always found fascinating is I think my wife, someone said it, there's a little bit of millennial in all of us. And I think you're illustrating that perfectly, that it's not, while it's easy to generalize, These traits can be found across generations, across types of folks. It's a good way to kind of break through some of the stereotypes that exist out there.
I agree. Your wife said it extremely well. Yep, I agree. I think we have to be able to soften those lines in between those to be able to really drive the value.
Yep, absolutely. Now, my wife also says that I've got a little bit of the silent generation in me because I like to eat at 5 p.m. So, you know, who knows? But
This episode of Supply Chain Now Radio was brought to you by Apex Atlanta, an association for supply chain management organization. Apex Atlanta provides supply chain thought leadership, networking, and certification opportunities for supply chain professionals. Consider getting involved with Apex Atlanta as a volunteer or general guest. Student memberships are free and the networking opportunities are numerous. Supply chain certification workshops can be delivered at your offices and are also offered through a partnership with Georgia Tech's Supply Chain and Logistics Institute. In 2019, CSCP and CLTD workshops are offered in a 2.5-day boot camp format in June and October. Whether you're interested in better understanding inventory management and planning fundamentals, end-to-end supply chain management concepts, or logistics, transportation, and distribution, Apex Atlanta has something for you. For more information on the workshops, the certifications, or area networking opportunities, check out apexatlanta.org or send a note to info@apexatlanta.org.
All right, so going back to Peggy, your career arc here, let's talk more about your current role. And in particular, can you speak to some of the developments, some maybe that you drove and others that were maybe part of the environment that created the opportunity to kind of step through the door?
For my current role, I've had a great leadership run in my career, which is spectacular because I've had incredible people who really take the value they see that I can contribute, and that's just for me. There's other people that do it differently and have different values to contribute, but and try to really broaden that. So I got in my last job, I was global business process improvement. And again, that's sort of what we would call nowadays, right, lean and finding better ways of doing things. When I joined AGCO, I came in and I had a lean team and an IT team underneath me. And so really, for those that are out there in the Industry 4.0 and the new innovation world, I'm really IT and OT merged. And it's a great way to get the value from both. I've always said that, you know, really the OT side, the process side, the lean side, the functional people are finding the ways to improve things. They find the problems, they know the problems, they solve the problems. But then IT really has to step in and find ways to automate that so that we don't have to ever revisit that problem and we're moving forward. And so really the systemic side and the sustainable side in one team, one area, with some creative leadership as we have attested to at the beginning, has allowed us to do some really neat things. So, you know, probably one of the big projects that happened at AGCO was the implementation of Google Glass to do electronic work instructions and quality checks, quality gates throughout our manufacturing assembly areas. And I think that to be able to take that solution and know that by having two hands, I can do my job better. I can do it faster. I don't have to walk to computers to find information if it's right by my side or on my head. We drove some great value back into the business doing that. And I think, you know, you take that process side and that IT side and pull them together, which in many companies are actually sort of disparate and competing with each other. The wins you have just are monumental and sometimes surprisingly monumental, where you didn't even know you were going to have a benefit that actually came through.
So let's shift from discussing your personal journey just a bit and want to go a little bit broader. I want to pick your brain on a couple things here, talking more about the industry and some of your insights. So why do you think, Peggy, the manufacturing industry is so challenged from a gender standpoint?
You know, I mean, I just think the concept, the manufacturing concept of what manufacturing currently is just hasn't caught up, the image. I think there's a lot of, it's not a dirty, dark, disparate, heavy lifting, tool-based career any longer. To be able to be successful, actually you have to be a little bit technological. You have to be able to program a cobot who's working side by side with you. You may have to, work with AGVs to get materials moved to you. So I think that it's changing. It's just changing a little slower than probably I would expect it to. But, we have, at AGCO, we have lots of women that come in who have never picked up a tool or fixed an engine. And, you can take 4 weeks of academy training, and their hand-eye coordination sometimes is better than some of the people that have been working here for years, right? So I think it's a skill that we have to take advantage of. There's training that has to go into it. And it's no longer, come into any of our plants anytime. It's not a dark, dirty career any longer. It is technologically advanced and quite an innovative way of working. We have as many females on the line as we do males in many of our plants now.
Well, it is so, to your point, it is much different than, manufacturing in 1978 or 82 even. Especially with the, as you've spoken to throughout the interview, all the digitization that that you're finding across industry, across the whole business landscape, but a lot of it in manufacturing. That you're creating things in some cases using your hands, but always using your brain, a lot of problem solving. I think there's so many different things that would appeal to folks no matter where they are in their career. And we've just got to figure out how to make sure we're creating opportunities for all, right?
I agree. And I and to your point, it's not just gender, right? It's for all. I mean, I think that tools that we implement within our organization to help with heavy lifting or supplement, exoskeletons. I mean, that's something that we use globally right now. We have chiropractors and physical therapists and all kinds of people that can help focus on if there's an issue, how to resolve the issue. And sometimes it's a movement issue. Sometimes it's actually the way we've defined the process and we need to fix it. So I think there's a lot more eyes on making sure that the comfort, the health, and the safety benefit that come into it are inherent, and that makes it for everybody a better job, not just gender based.
That's right. Yep. So you've already kind of outlined a response to this next question, but just in case there's anything else there you'd like to add. So when we talk about addressing the gender gap, which I've heard Kathleen Edge from Southwire, when she spoke at the Georgia Manufacturing Summit several years back, she gave a great quote that I think resonated with the hundreds of folks from manufacturing that was in attendance, where this war for talent era that we're in, it's difficult to really effectively and successfully tackle the skills gap if we don't effectively and successfully attack the gender gap. There's so much truth to that, but if you had to pick a starting point and maybe piggyback on some of what you just shared, but what else can we do as leaders within industry where it's not lip service, but what are some practical ways we can move the needle in our own neck of the woods, so to speak?
It's funny, Scott, because I think you just said it. I think just recognizing the issue is probably the biggest way that we can move the needle, right? I think we haven't verbalized it, acknowledged it throughout, and I think the industry is doing that now. I think the industry is doing it because we know that to fill the manufacturing positions that we're going to have in the next 10 years, we need to eliminate any kind of gender gap that there is, because we need females and males on that workforce. I mean, that's the only way we're going to fill all of these positions. Yep. But I think for me, I'm really fortunate because I'm really in a role that is somewhat titled Digital Transformation, but Industry 4.0. And I think that, the whole Industry 4.0 manufacturing sector really is one of the things allowing us to reshape and address some of the longer held workforce challenges. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot more, you know, when the job becomes more technical, the jobs just aren't coming in and assembling. The job is, again, being able to work with robots, cobots, AGVs, drones. I mean, there's a lot of technical that comes into it. And as we do that, we're going to have to retrain a lot of the workforce that we currently have. But it offers a lot more opportunity for a more diverse population of people coming in as we grow the workforce or have to replace through attrition. So I think that, for me, the place that I've been focused, and of course our HR team is working side by side in many other ways, but is, you know, I believe that Industry 4.0, that technological advancement, is really going to be something that allows us to reshape how we work in manufacturing and who we gain as employees.
Yep. I like where you're saying. Absolutely. Because it will continue to be a moving target, right? Today's challenges. Yeah. Yep. While there will be some common threads 10 years from now or 20 years from now, there'll still be some new wrinkles to that, new tweaks to that, new dynamics at play. So to your point, it's a moving target, and just because we make traction today, it could well be gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
But going back to one of the things you mentioned there, Peggy, is at first you got to acknowledge there's a challenge and yep. You got to start to define the problem, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
All right. So let's and you've given, I think, this next question.
Going back to that 1 second, Scott, I think, too, there's when you acknowledge it, it's not just saying, yeah, boy, we need to be able to hire more diversely or females. I think there's a little bit of an unconscious bias, too, that we've created in that whole arena. That needs to be addressed. And it's not just acknowledging it, but it's literally sitting down and addressing it. And I think that, you know, IACO does a spectacular job at that.
Yep, absolutely. With this next question, I'm glad you kind of added that to it, because we're all trying to avoid lip service. Lip service, while it sounds great, it just sets us back, and it's a demotivating factor, especially for those that are the ones being left out in the cold, you know, not getting some of the opportunities here. So, you know, having a bias for action, however we try to move the needle, is such a critical element, I believe. So you've already given, I can tell you, through the first, you know, 40 minutes or so of this interview, I think there's already plenty of advice and plenty of insights that a lot of it's very actionable. But because we want to circle back and make sure that, you know, there's not more there. So what other advice, especially from a leadership standpoint, what other advice would you have for young ladies that might differ from advice you'd give any and everyone?
That's so tough. So I will do this based on me and things I wish, again, that if I went back to the beginning of my career or things that I had known, it may have been a faster progression. Or I may have had, you know, been able to make an impact faster for the business's sake and my own. But I think really I'm a true advocate of the sponsor and mentorship in a business. I don't think everyone has a formal program, but I believe that as a female, if you can find that person who really has your best interest at heart, who understands where you're trying to go, what your value is, and is truly an advocate for you, I think there's great value in that. And I think that's one of the greatest things that we really can do. And again, it may not be a formal program where you wait around for someone to marry you up with someone, but we all know we have that person that when we come into a company that you're like, oh, they get it, right? They get it. And if you can somehow attach yourself and get some coaching or some mentoring from that person, I think it's critical. I think, you know, the old adage, and I read about this all the time, and every time I do, I'm like, yeah. I think that taking a risk as a female, moving into new positions, even though we may not be comfortable, maybe we don't think we have all the skills at the point in time we take it, really basically you know, if you really have that passion and commitment, you're going to learn it, you're going to excel at it, and to be honest, you're going to move on again and do the same thing. So, you know, don't be afraid to not have 100% of the skills when you walk into a new position. And I think, you know, for me, don't be afraid to say no. And I think that, you know, taking everything on, feeling that that's the way to add value is absolutely the opposite. And really being able to prioritize and do the things that do add value and say no so that you're not overcommitting. I think my dad used to always tell me that, you know, Peg, if you're given 250% when you go into a job for the first 6 months and then you drop back to 180%, they're going to say, well, what happened? She used to be such a great employee. And I think that's really true of a lot of the women that I work with, where you always deliver, it's everything, and in the end, it's really not doing a whole heck of a lot for you, your image, your career, and your ability to truly drive that value back in. So don't be afraid to say no. That would be my last one.
Well, and I know from the last time we got together and had a great conversation around innovation and leadership, I know that you're also a big fan of don't be afraid to make a mistake, right?
Absolutely.
So speak to that a little bit, Peggy.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think that's going to be easier for people to do nowadays, because I think the whole world is going to have to go to that level of how we deliver change to our business. But, you know, from a corporate perspective, I think for many, many years, and this goes back again, I think it's changing. You know, we couldn't make mistakes, right? That was part of our job. You had to deliver on time and exactly this, and on budget, and the mistake, the thought process just sort of doesn't come into it. Being creative and being diverse is what's going to differentiate us as we move forward. And in that, you're going to have to be able to make a mistake. Now, you have to be smart enough to know when it is a mistake, pull back, learn from the mistake, and then move forward. But you know, that's the way we deliver the greatest value. The first pair of Google Glass that came into this building was through the IT team, through a delivery to a process that we had, and it was big thinking. It may have worked, it may not have worked, and there wasn't a really huge business case behind it, but, you know, now it's a comprehensive solution that we have throughout the building. So if you can't make a mistake, you're never going to think creatively, and you may not ever achieve that big win that's just sitting out there because you're afraid to take the chance. So
yeah.
I've made many mistakes, and I'll be the first one to stand up and say that was a bad idea.
And, you know, I think that's an important element when it comes to servant, not just servant leadership, but progressive leadership, that sense of humility. I think that's what is so refreshing about kind of that style of leadership and what makes it so effective.
Right. Right, and I agree. And I think at the same time too, then you have to hold yourself accountable, right? So one time shame on them, two times shame on me. So if I repeat the mistake, that might be a different problem. But if I learn from the mistake and add it into my knowledge base, then I'm better for having done it.
Yep. So as we start to wind down the interview here, you already alluded to it, and we have seen it play out a number of different ways. Of course, ADCO's got a great presence, and right here in Gwinnett County, just on North Atlanta, so to speak. So let's wrap up today's interview kind of sharing a few neat things that ADCO is doing to engage not just their workforce, but to engage a diverse workforce and again, provide opportunities for all.
Right. So that's probably one of the proudest things I carry with me at ADCO. So when I came in, we had an organization called ADCO Global Women's Network. You know, I've been plugged in and a contributor, but it really it has been something to help women to, you know, network and have some of the skills that they need to move up. Started with really basically, it goes all the way down, I should say it in a different way, it goes all the way down to our manufacturing floor. We've had, you know, many women from manufacturing all the way up to our senior management winning STEP awards in Washington, D.C., and really engaging and broadening their career with ADCO, and every time it happens, they just add more value. That's actually now broadened into a concept that we're implementing called trait. And great idea, great team behind it. And really that stands for team spirit, respect, accountability, integrity, and transparency. Mm. And those are really relevant to, as you said, diversification, not, you know, gender-based only. And I think as we do that, you know, if we can all walk that walk, wow, that makes a major difference in how we work together and how we work outside of our own company, whether it be customers or any stakeholder. I think the other place that our HR team by a plant and then also corporately, you know, there's a lot of investment in scholarships, continuing education. So, you know, we can't just focus on those people we're trying to bring in as employees. We have to focus on our employees right now. And really, I think that ECHO takes a very strong role in making everyone that works with us, smarter, stronger, safer, better at what they do, better at how they feel, and what they contribute. And I think the last thing that we're doing a really great job on is the mentoring. And we talked about that a little bit ago. And we do have a formal program, so although I said, you know, you can find that person, the formal programs are spectacular too. A lot of training that goes into it so that we're really driving value from a mentoring perspective. And probably really interesting, and you mentioned it, and you were mentioning your wife, is the generational piece of it and reverse mentoring, right? Really understanding the new workforce coming in at the leadership level of the business so that we understand the needs and the requirements and, you know, really what makes it a job that they love coming into every day. So I think ECHO invests, probably the largest investment they make is their people. And those are some of the great programs that I've at least had the honor of participating in to help me and to help others within our organization.
Mm. Wow. ECHO certainly is not resting on its laurels, and I appreciate the passion that was evident as you kind of walked through some of the things that they're doing. Again, to drive action, not lip service. So I appreciate that, Peggy. So how can folks learn more about ECHO?
So the easiest way is to just visit our website, which is www.ECHO, which is ECHO.com.
Fantastic. And we've been talking. We want to give a big thanks to Peggy Gulick, Director of Digital Transformation, Global Manufacturing for ECHO. Peggy, we could talk for easily a couple more hours. I appreciate the passion and your leadership, your servant leadership, and the perspective that you shared that I think we all can benefit from, regardless of what, you know, what walk of life you're coming from. I think a lot of what you shared is very actionable, very practical, and inspiring in many ways. So thanks so much, Peggy.
Well, thank you, Scott. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You bet. So let's wrap up real quick with a couple of announcements. We talked about earlier with Peggy Gulick about the value of continuing to learn, always continuing to develop yourself professionally and personally. So if, from a supply chain management standpoint, that idea resonates with you, you've got an opportunity to earn a world-class supply chain management credential. We've got upcoming APIX Atlanta classes at Georgia Tech Supply Chain and Logistics Institute. Our next CSCP and CLTD boot camps are the week of June 24th. You can learn more at scl.gatech.edu. Supply Chain Now Radio is a proud media partner of EFT's 3PL and Supply Chain Summit in Atlanta, June 10th through the 12th. Home run lineup of speakers from a wide variety of companies. I think they've got over 1,000 executives coming out for what promises to be a great industry event. We're going to be broadcasting live thanks to the great folks over at Becker Logistics. You can check them out at beckerlogistics.com. If you're interested in the event, registration is still open. You can learn more at EFT.com or send us a note to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at supplychainnowradio.com, and we'll get you more information. Again, a big thanks today to our wonderful guest as we kick off our full access series here on Supply Chain Now Radio, looking to spotlight exceptional leaders, female leaders across industry. you know, folks that have the passion and the drive and the know-how, and they're willing to share that and give back to others. That's the kind of folks we want on this series, and we couldn't have, I don't think, we could have led off with a better interview. So big thanks again to Peggy Gulick with AGCO. To our listeners, be sure to check out other upcoming events, replays of our interviews, other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. Of course, as we mentioned on the front end, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, all the other leading sites where podcasts can be found. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. On behalf of the entire Supply Chain Now Radio team, this is Scott Luton wishing you all a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Remember the reason behind the season, and we hope to see you next time on Supply Chain Now Radio. Thanks, everybody. Okay. Peggy, excellent interview. Excellent.
Did it go okay?
I think you nailed it, and I
get so tongue tied when you know it's recording. Isn't that funny? I can sit at lunch and talk until I'm blue, and I get words just don't flow.
Well, Peggy, you know what? I'm very self-critical. Honestly, I'd tell you otherwise. I don't think you got tongue tied at all. I mean, I thought it was a well, even-handed, a commonsensical interview, and I think it came across very genuine. And I think it came across, I wish I could speak like you, frankly.
No, you do a great job, and I'm seriously just so honored to even be a part of the program, let alone your kickoff.
Well, it couldn't, again, I appreciate you taking time. I know you got 15,000 projects and probably several burning plates, but this has been great. I think it's going to be helpful for a lot of the folks that we want to share this with, and I look forward to grabbing lunch with you again real soon.
Thanks for listening to Supply Chain Now Radio. To listen to more episodes, check us out on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, SoundCloud, or supplychainnowradio.com. And if you're interested in advancing your career, team building exercises, or simply satisfying your intellectual curiosity, check out an APIC certification workshop at apicsatlanta.org.